there's still things that I'm going to have to take care of as an owner. And I've done that and don't want to do that ever again either. So I kind of learned that the hard way. It's not that I had this kind of intuition from the very beginning. It's literally something I've learned, you know, the school of hard knocks. I tried it, it didn't work. I tried it, it didn't work. And when you really sit down and think about why it didn't work, it's not that they're bad styles of investing. They just weren't styles of investing that got me to my goals.
Welcome to Passive Income Unlocked, where we unlock the doors to intelligent, hands-off real estate investing. We talk to experts in the space about what they do, how they do it, and most importantly, why they do it. My passion is careful, intelligent investing and closing the investing gap one investor at a time. While money doesn't buy happiness, passive income does have the potential to buy back your time. What would you choose to do with your time if you had enough passive income to live your best life? How would you like to spend your days? What kind of impact would you like to make? I'm here to tell you, dream big. There's no ceiling. It's all possible if you take consistent action towards your goals. It's been said that success is 80% mindset and 20% strategy. So we discuss both. Ready to gain knowledge and take action? Let's dive in.
Hey, everyone, and welcome back to the show today. I'm so excited to announce our guest for today, Alex Brashears. Alex, thanks so much for being here.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
We are happy to have you. So Alex is a military spouse, private lender, passive investor, short-term rental owner and manager, and a director of investor relations at a Reg A Plus fund that is purchasing multifamily assets in the Southeast and Midwest. Well, that, Alex, is quite a range of real estate activities that you have gotten yourself into. I'd love to hear what drew you into the space and a little bit about the different, your story and the different asset classes and investment vehicles that you're in.
It always sounds like a lot, but to me, it doesn't necessarily feel like a lot. And I think that speaks to, because my primary way of investing is passive investing. So that allows me the time freedom to kind of do what I passionately want to get involved in. So a little bit about me. As you mentioned, I'm a military spouse for the last 19 years. My spouse has been in the military for 20 years. We have moved 19 times in that 20-year span. I mean, we gotten 2 weeks forewarning we were moving across the country. So it's been a little bit of a chaos. So you think you're going one place, you end up being moved to another. And as someone that has experience investing in real estate knows, it is not really a quick moving asset. It's not like stocks where you're going to go and purchase something that morning and then, oh, the stock rose, you know, in the last 3 hours. So you're going to turn around and sell it. You know, real estate tends to be a slow moving asset. It's fairly illiquid. So if you're only going to be living somewhere for 3 months, you know, maybe 6 months, maybe 12 months at a time, that doesn't give you a whole lot of time to kind of dig into what that market is, find the deals, close the deals. You know, if you're going to renovate it, you know, all that renovation process and that renovation time. So I think, you know, it really comes back to what is your lifestyle? What is your requirements as an investor? And even though that laundry looks and sounds relatively unrelated, a lot of those positions are in complementary roles because I can do those positions in a way that suits my lifestyle and they always meet my goals.
Awesome. So, you know, before the show, we were talking a little bit about what people are generally looking for, sometimes looking for when they're getting into real estate and about, you know, a lot of people want to leave their job. How has that sort of question obviously you're, maybe it doesn't affect you directly, but what has your experience taught you about that?
As a military spouse, military spouses in general had underemployment or unemployment well above the national average, oftentimes 4 to 10 times the national average. So it was always something in my life where I was highly educated, I was smart, but I never lived anywhere long enough to get, you know, what most people would consider a career kind of job. And I always had this desire where I wanted to contribute financially to my household, to my family. I didn't want to just kind of sit around and cook and clean. You know, I thought I was destined to do more than that with my life. So that really led to, okay, how can I invest? There's got to be a way where I can bring in income to the household that doesn't necessarily require a job. And that led me down the road of real estate investing very early on. And going back to, you know, pre-COVID times when you could actually gather in places together, I attended, you know, regular RIA meetings wherever we happened to live. And at this particular RIA meeting, I met someone that was a private lender or a hard money lender, depending on how you look at it. And he found out I was a science major. My normal W-2 job is I'm a chemistry professor. So I was an undergraduate at the time. And he's like, oh, so you must be good with numbers since you're a science major. And I was like, yeah, not too bad. You know, I'm in Calc 3 right now. I can do this. And he's like, well, have you ever thought about, you know, being a lender, you know, working in lending? It's, you know, he kind of explained what the process was. And this was 20 years ago, back before smartphones were a thing. You know, fax machines were still all the rage. And you know, he explained it to me. And then he said the magic words every college student loves to hear is you can work your own hours. And I was like, yes, that works perfectly because I need to work around my schedule, you know, my class schedule. And during that whole process, I was actually going out to the properties to meet potential borrowers. And I was looking at their scope of work, like in person, you know, I was seeing basically the real estate investing, you know, what we now kind of term the BRRRR model in firsthand. But I was also getting the opportunity to see that BRRRR model from the lender's perspective, because I also worked in this guy's office. So I was the person processing the checks, taking the checks to the bank. You know, this is back before, you know, digital payment was really a thing. And the one thing I always noticed is the landlords, the people who are doing the BRRRRs, if the contractor ran off with their deposit, if the contractor was 3 months behind, if the tenant moved in and hadn't paid rent in 3 months, no matter what happened, the mortgage had to be paid. So the landlords always seemed to be in this position where they were kind of crossing their fingers and hoping nothing breaks for about 30 days until rent, you know, was due. And then they were going to be able to collect their $150 if they were good, you know, really good rental, $150 that month. And then otherwise it was just cross your fingers and hope nothing breaks and then keep on going for the next 12 months during the lease. But on the flip side, I was also seeing what this private lender and, you know, hard money lender was doing, where I was routinely cashing checks for interest only payments anywhere between $700 and $2,700 a month. And it didn't matter that the contractor took off with the supplies. It didn't matter the tenant didn't pay. You know, it didn't matter the project was 3 months behind schedule. They still had to make the mortgage payment. So it was kind of funny to be able to walk that line and think, oh, I could go through all of this and deal with contractors and be out in the heat and scoping out deals and all of this. Or I could be in the office in the air conditioning because I was in Florida at the time. So air conditioning is a premium thing. You know, be inside in the air conditioning and still have the ability to make some sort of capital work for me in some capacity. I was like, yeah, I'm going to do that. Thank you.
Yeah, awesome. So you got into doing private lending. And so were you lending on flips?
I was lending exclusively on flips, especially now during COVID, because I think the conventional lending standards have been, you know, a little wishy-washy. You know, they tightened up a whole lot at the very beginning of COVID, then they loosened up a little, and then they tightened up when cases spiked again. They're not quite as loose as they were before COVID, so for non-owner occupied property. So with historically low inventory, you know, right now in the housing sector, I think it just makes more sense as a private lender to fund fix and flip so the investors can get the property up and gone. And, you know, as soon as it hits MLS, it's usually gone within 24 hours, at least in my local market.
For sure. Yeah, that's really awesome. And I just also want to say, Alex, it's like so awesome that you have been able to develop a career while still being able to be a military spouse, you know, and really grow and thrive in your career, even though you're moving around all the time. So kudos to you. And I know I want to hear your take on, you know, we talked about you being underemployed as a military spouse and, you know, you're also a woman in this space. How do you view real estate investing in relation to, you know, women's and women's potential for wealth development?
It was kind of funny. I hadn't really had it pointed out to me. I hadn't thought about it until it was pointed out to me that I was the only woman in the room. I was routinely going to these RIA meetings and I would see, you know, maybe 30% of the room is women, but a lot of the women are not the owners. You know, they're not the lenders. They're in what I call these kind of support roles. And not that that's a bad thing, but it was just kind of very stark, you know, contrast between like the men in the room were the real estate investors. The men in the room were the lenders, you know, the men in the room were the brokers, whatever it was. And then the women in the room worked in some sort of support capacity. You know, they were the loan processors, not the lenders. They were the realtor, not the broker. You know, they were the property manager, not the owner, you know, not the investor. And I didn't really think that through until someone pointed out that I had actually attended some Zoom meeting, you know, very early on during COVID. And somebody pointed out, it was a friend of mine, actually, and he's like, you're the only woman in the room. And I thought about it, and I was like, holy crap, he's right. And so that kind of started my crusade to get more women involved in real estate. Because I mean, if I can do it, I know anybody can do it. And it really kind of spoke to me, you know, knowing that the income gap gets a lot of media attention. You know, a lot of people realize, you know, women will earn about 70% of what a man does with similar experience and education and background. But nobody really thinks about kind of the, you know, second and third order effects of what that income gap does. So for example, women tend to outlive their spouses. So they are going to live longer. They're likely to go to the doctor more frequently. And since they live longer, they're also going to have more medical expenses. They also tend to bear the vast majority of the time and expense of childcare, caring for the kids, you know, household, everything that goes on. So we're kind of at this like perfect storm to not build wealth because we are, you know, running the household, because we are trying to build some sort of career, because we are supporting our spouse and their career and all of this. And then on top of that, we are not earning as much income. So we don't have as much disposable income. It really creates this perfect storm for not investing. So what I thought was private lending and passive investing, I think would be something that speaks specifically to women because you are allowing them a way to invest that isn't adding another tornado to their life. They're not out there having to put bandit signs on the side of the road that said, we buy ugly houses. They're not having to take calls from distressed sellers at 2 o'clock in the morning. They're not having to deal with contractors not showing up on the job. You know, it's just, it's something, it's a way to invest and bring in additional capital that isn't going to be, you know, massive amounts of time already added to their busy week.
For sure. Yeah. I think that's such an important point. I mean, just everything that you said, there's so much there. And I love that you're on this crusade. How are you actually, you know, trying to get more women involved?
This show is sponsored by Lux Capital Investment Group. Lux Capital provides pre-vetted, highly favorable investment opportunities on a risk-adjusted basis. Our opportunities are diversified across asset classes, geographies, and operators. We are nothing short of rigorous in our approach to evaluating investments. We focus on downside protection, conservative underwriting, recession-resistant asset classes, and forging strong relationships with operating partners and investors. If you want to be an intelligent, hands-off investor and gain access to the types of deals that I like to invest in personally, make sure to go to lux-cap.com, L-U-X-E-cap.com, and sign up for our newsletter.
So I started a group, a Facebook group called Private Lending Lessons, and it was not intended, not planned. You know, I was actually out looking for community because I knew I couldn't be the only person investing in this way. And I knew I couldn't be the only woman investing in this way. And every group I joined on Facebook that had something to do with private lending or passive investing or, you know, hard money lending was basically a place for like scams and spam. And I was like, okay, there's got to be something education-based, something networking-based. I couldn't find it. And then an associate of mine said, why don't you just start a group? And I'm like, I've got like 8 years of college that none of them talked about marketing and graphic design and all of this. And, you know, my background's in chemistry. And they said, I'll just start one. So I started a Facebook group totally on a whim. And then about a week later, I had like 100 people in the group. And I was like, oh my God, what am I going to do? Crap. I got to actually make a go of this. And then the group actually turned 1 year old on Sunday, and there's 4,200 people in the group. And it just, I was like, okay, this really became a thing. This has become a movement. And, you know, shockingly enough, over half of the group is women. And when I really started diving into the members of the group, getting to know them, kind of seeing who was joining, it really brought attention to the fact that this style of investing really resonates with women. So we do daily discussions. We do weekly educational events. We have monthly networking events. So we can kind of get all these private lenders that are scattered all over the globe kind of into quote unquote one room, and they can talk shop. They can just meet each other. They can have, you know, some point of contact to ask questions. So it's just been an amazing experience from the get-go, totally unplanned.
Interesting. So I want to ask you about that. But before we go back to the group, I want to ask you to circle back on something that you talked about in the beginning, which is, you know, being in the position of the like note holder, and, you know, you're going to get paid first, as opposed to when you're owning property and you have to pay the bank. Can you just speak a little bit, just for our listeners who are maybe a little bit newer to investing and real estate?
Sure. So private lending is basically, in a short version, you are pretending to be the bank. So you are providing the money for, you know, let's just say a fix and flip investor to purchase the property. Maybe you're providing funds for the renovation, and then they are making a monthly mortgage payment or whatever you guys have worked out to you as the lender, as if you were the bank.
Okay, great. So basically, you know, just to expand on what you're saying, it's so when if someone like a flipper is, if you've lent money to a flipper, then they're going to pay you before they pay anybody else, because otherwise they're going to lose the property, right? And so it puts you in kind of like the power position.
Yes. I mean, because my interest in the property is actually recorded with a deed of trust or a mortgage, you know, depending on what state you're in. They sign a promissory note. They've personally guaranteed that promissory note. So there's definitely, you know, there's a whole process, a legal process that's happening. You know, I will be on title as a lien holder. You know, so if anybody tries to pull title on that property, they'll see in the future when they go to sell it that there's a lien on that property and, you know, how much it is and who it goes to. So it's not me just giving some random flipper $100,000 and say, you know, do good with this. It's actually secured against an asset.
Yeah. Awesome. And so are you typically in first or second position?
Usually in first position. There are, I will do some second liens, and those are generally in a position where the borrower has taken the property subject to. So the first mortgage is already in place and they just need additional funds for maybe renovations, maybe holding costs for that first mortgage for a short period of time.
Okay. Got it. Okay. So thanks for explaining that. Now let's circle back to the group. What is it about private lending that you think is appealing to women?
It is extremely flexible and not very time intensive. So once you have a good understanding of what the general process is, you are familiar with kind of the lending laws that are going to be applicable to you as a lender, maybe of your state, depending on the type of property that you want to lend on, the types of loans you want to do. It really is just a lot of kind of rinse and repeat. It's analyzing the deals, you know, does this make sense? Is this after repair value feasible? If they want to sell it, is it a market that it's likely to sell in? You know, is it in a strong rental market where they're probably not going to get, you know, top retail dollar because it's not a retail, you know, neighborhood. So it's really just once you've kind of learned those skills and honed those skills, somebody can send you over information for a loan and you could be like, okay, you know, within the first couple of minutes, you can kind of get a feel, this is something I want to dive into, or this is something like, no, I'm not interested. And then private lending also tends to be a lot more relationship-based. It's not very transactional. So if you found a couple borrowers that you really jive with, that you have a good history with, you know, they always made their payments on time, they always got the money back to you like they were supposed to, you know, you really don't even have to do the underwriting on them anymore. It's just a matter of looking at the property. So kind of as you get further and further along in your experience, the workload actually becomes less and less.
Okay, got it. And so it sounds like you're doing passive investing as well as private lending. Can you talk about the differences between those? Like, are you taking profits from your private lending and putting it into passive investments, or how do you view the two as complementary?
The two are very complementary because the passive investing side, the way we choose to quote unquote passively invest is as an LP or limited partner in syndications in multifamily property. And we're looking to expand into industrial property. And that particular position, you are an equity investor. You are, you know, if you want to think about it, you're kind of part owner of that asset. So you will get some of the tax depreciation benefits of ownership. Whereas when you're doing strictly private lending, you're only on the debt side. So there is no, you know, depreciation, you know, tax benefits that go along with private lending because you are not an owner. You are on the debt side of the equation. So I basically kind of use both of them, you know, so I get the debt benefits and the equity benefits, but obviously just in two different assets.
Awesome. Okay. And so, you know, one thing we touched on before the show is this conversation that you were having with yourself about what actually will fit your lifestyle as far as your investing strategy. And can you speak to that a bit?
Yes. And So I know one of the popular things right now is to, you know, join a boot camp or a mastermind or some sort of like weekend guru thing. And those aren't bad things. I don't want to disparage them, but there's never a conversation with newer investors that is that style of investing appropriate for you. You know, if you sign up to do a Burr boot camp, they're not going to talk you out of doing Burrs. They're just going to show you how to do Burrs. So I feel like there needs to be a step before that where new investors really sit down with themselves, their partners, you know, their spouse, whatever, and say, you know, this is what I want to do. You know, I need to find a style of investing that kind of checks these boxes for myself. What are my strengths? What are my weaknesses? What is my personality support? You know, if I'm not a very outgoing person, somebody that's going to want to do wholesaling and you're not an outgoing person, it's going to be a very large uphill climb, you know, and also what your lifestyle, like my lifestyle involved the need for a lot of geographical freedom because we get sent across the country sometimes with little forewarning. So obviously me being a fix and flip investor, if I get 2 weeks forewarning, I need to leave the state and I'm kind of midway through a project, that means I'm now remote, you know, working remote project managing, which I don't want to do. I've done it. I don't want to do it. Or I'm going to be a remote landlord, you know, from a couple thousand miles away. And even with a property manager involved, there's still things that I'm going to have to take care of as an owner. And I've done that and don't want to do that ever again either. So I kind of learned that the hard way. It's not that I had this kind of intuition from the very beginning. It's literally something I've learned, you know, the school of hard knocks. I tried it, it didn't work. I tried it, it didn't work. And when you really sit down and think about why it didn't work, it's not that they're bad styles of investing. They just weren't styles of investing that got me to my goals. They weren't complementary to my skill set, and they certainly weren't complementary to my lifestyle.
Awesome. Yeah. Well, I think it's so important for all of us to, I mean, it's true. It's once you kind of figure out what niche you want to be on, then you can just be all in on that niche. But it's important to kind of keep in mind, is this working with my lifestyle, and try to understand the landscape. And that can actually take quite a bit of time, because if you get in an echo chamber with people who are like really into one thing, then it can seem like that's like the only thing out there. And so, yeah, very good, excellent words of advice. Thanks so much, Alex, for coming on the show. I can't wait to see what you guys do next. Would you please take a moment to share with the listeners how they can get in touch with you and anything else you'd like to share?
So the group is on Facebook, is Private Lending Lessons. They're welcome to join that. And again, it's purely an educational networking based group. There's nothing to buy. Everything is free. It's just come ask questions, you know, seek answers and make connections. I'm also on LinkedIn. So my URL is actually invest passively to live actively, because that is the kind of the framework I build my life around. So if I'm presented with opportunities, I see if it fits within my mantra. If it doesn't, then I say no. So that allows me to literally be very cognizant of what I'm choosing to bring into my life. So feel free to reach out either through the group or on LinkedIn. You can send me a message or a connection, and I'm happy to talk to anybody. I mean, it really makes me happy to get more people involved in private lending and passive investing.
Awesome. Well, I hope you all take some time to reach out to Alex, find her on LinkedIn, find her Facebook group. Alex, thank you so much for coming on the show, and can't wait to have you on again next time.
Thank you. It was great.
Thank you so much for listening to Passive Income Unlocked. Before you go on to continue with your amazing day, please take a moment to reflect on what you truly desire in life. Then think about one thing you can do to push the ball forward in that direction. Also, please head over to iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts and leave an honest rating and review of this show. It really would mean so much to me. Passive Income Unlocked is brought to you by Lux Capital. Lux works with investors nationwide to invest in real estate. We are closing the investing gap one investor at a time. Connect online at www.lux-cap.com, LUXE-CAP.com, for tons of free educational content to further your success.